You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. As many as three people may have been detained by federal immigration enforcement officers in Astoria Sunday morning. Immigration advocates and local activists are condemning the arrests, but they are also raising concerns about where some of the operation appears to have been staged, on land owned by the Port of Astoria. They say the port may have violated Oregon sanctuary law that prohibits state and local law enforcement and state agencies from collaborating with ICE on immigration enforcement without a judicial warrant. Port officials, including Port Executive Director Will Isom, say they had no idea ICE was in the area or using fenced-off port property at Pier 1. Port Commission President Dirk Roan believes ICE may have taken advantage of the presence of a U.S. Navy ship docked at the end of Pier 1. The fenced-off area where ICE was seen with multiple vehicles is technically under federal control when Navy ships are at the port. But Roan says it isn't clear who suggested ICE go behind that fence or who gave them permission to do so. Port security staff were at the scene, and Roan says Isom will be interviewing employees to try to determine what happened. The nonprofit Consejo Hispano in Astoria has called on the port to disclose how and why the alleged cooperation with ICE occurred, and to take steps to ensure it doesn't happen again. The nonprofit plans to file a complaint with the Oregon Department of Justice. For many people, Astoria, Oregon is most famous for being the location of the 1980s cult classic, The Goonies. But a number of beloved 80s films have also prominently featured the North Coast city. Over the weekend, the sci-fi comedy Short Circuit had its 40th birthday. Cast, crew, and movie buffs from all over arrived in Astoria to celebrate Johnny Five being alive. KMUN's Ava Berardi brings us this audio postcard.
Hi, I am Johnny Five. How can I help you today?
If you were in Astoria over the weekend, you may have come across a life-size replica of the robot Johnny Five roaming the streets.
As long as Frank doesn't show up, I'm good. No disassemble. Number Five is alive.
Short Circuit follows Number Five, an experimental military robot who gets struck by lightning and develops a human consciousness. He escapes his lab and is taken in by Stephanie, played by Ally Sheedy, and the two must evade a government manhunt in search of him. Outside of the Armory in Astoria, fans are waiting to take photos with original cast members and shop at the Retro Market, where vendors are selling nostalgic merchandise and collectibles. I spoke with movie buffs outside of the event celebrating Johnny Five's birthday.
It was on TV and my parents had recorded it and I saw it one day and I think after that I just wanted to watch it again and again and again.
Probably 7 or 8 years old I saw it and I said I want to grow up and be a robotics engineer. So and I now work at a university that is famous for robotics, so somewhat close.
You know, I have a connection to kind of all things 80s. My childhood was kind of rough once the 90s started because my parents got divorced and I spent... like all my good memories of my childhood are like from like that kind of time.
And it's almost kind of like a family love story in the end of it. So it's pretty neat how it ends.
The event was put on by TemsCon and the Oregon Film Festival and has pulled quite the crowd. Fans say events like this really bring one another together.
I'm excited, I guess, just to be around so many people that are as excited as I am to be about this. So I don't know a lot of people in my life that really are into the movie or care about it. So to be around other people as excited is very
same,
cool.
Same. So I was like, Joe, you got to come with me. You're the only one I know who would be this excited about this.
We got a lot of people back home that they don't do anything on the weekends. And they just always ask me, well, what are you doing? And so, I told them, well, I'm going to meet up with a stranger in Oregon and see how things go.
To wrap up the birthday festivities, Fort George Brewery hosted live bar trivia and live music. But fans of the film won't be forgetting this weekend anytime soon.
I'm excited to see Astoria because I'd only ever seen it in, like, 1980s films like The Goonies, Short Circuit. So to travel here and actually see where these films were filmed, I saw the Short Circuit house, it's just been amazing.
I'm Ava Berardi reporting for KMUN.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. A protester who was pepper sprayed in the face by federal officers during an anti-ICE protest has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government. As Troy Brennelson reports, this is the second lawsuit to stem from the Trump administration's crackdown on protests in Portland last fall.
The incident made national news. A teenager face-to-face with a few federal officers one night in October.
We witnessed this female protester get maced in the face by a federal agent for unknown reasons. She had been yelling at agents, but we didn't see anything physical.
In her lawsuit, Leilani Payne says the incident was retaliation for her freedom of speech. She says federal protective service officers haven't been adequately trained to handle protesters exercising their constitutional rights. This lawsuit comes 3 months after a Marine veteran sued for being tackled by federal officers on two occasions. The Department of Homeland Security did not immediately respond to requests for comment.
That was OPB's Troy Brennelson reporting.
Summer is just weeks away, and tourism traffic has already picked up on Oregon's north coast. But it could be a very different kind of year for this major component of the coastal economy. Up next, our partners with Let's Talk Tillamook take a local look at tourism and the impacts of Trump administration policies.
Welcome to Let's Talk Tillamook. I'm Shana Peterson. Tourism is one of the Oregon coast's most vital industries, and managing it takes more than pretty pictures. Dan Haig is the interim executive director of Visit Tillamook Coast, and his work from stewardship and workforce training to community grant reflects challenges and opportunities shared by coastal communities. Dan, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Dan, tell us about Visit Tillamook Coast and your role there, and give us a sense of how significant tourism is to the economic health of the Oregon coast.
Sure. We have four people on our team. I'm the interim executive director, and we also have Nicole Steen, Ashley Carr, and Mariah Surratt on our team. And we are the destination management organization for Tillamook County. And what that means in a nutshell is, as far as tourism management goes, we do all the traditional things that a DMO would do or a tourism agency would do. We do our fair share of marketing, and we tell people about how great it is to visit here, and please behave accordingly when you visit here, and you know, pick up what you leave, and treat everybody nice. We do all those kinds of things. We share pretty pictures and try to promote this as a great place to visit. But the management side is kind of what we've leaned into a lot more over the past few years, and that just has to do with messaging about conservation and stewardship, volunteering opportunities when you come out here, ways to enjoy that leave to enjoy your visit that leave a minimal impact or a little minimal footprint, take nothing but pictures. So the management part is really important to what we do. And it also involves involvement with the community. We call it community-based tourism, where we work on things like workforce training for our local tourism businesses. We offer a variety of grants that benefit small businesses and nonprofits and port districts and cities. We work closely with some schools and do training in tourism and hospitality industry stuff for our local schools. So it's a wider variety of things than you may think of when you think tourism. We try to make sure that we're having a positive impact so people can enjoy their experience here, but also that programs that we're doing have a positive impact on the quality of life for people who live here as well.
That's a much bigger picture than most people have of a local tourism office. And it's a bigger picture that looks similar all along the Oregon coast. Federal policy shifts, border tensions, and a spike in gas prices are all converging at once, and coastal communities from Astoria to Brookings are feeling it. I sat down with Dan Haig, interim executive director of Visit Tillamook Coast, to ask how these pressures are reshaping tourism along the entire Oregon coast. The current administration has been reshuffling policies around public lands and national monuments at the same time that international visitor numbers are dropping, with travelers expressing concerns about border policies and America's global image. Rising gas prices are another factor. Are you seeing these pressures reflected in visitor patterns along the Oregon coast? And how is the tourism community responding?
Well, I think the big one and the big answer, international travel has been obviously affected. And the big answer for us is our Canadian friends who are just not coming the way they used to come. I think I saw numbers from Travel Oregon said 30% of international travel was made up by Canadians in 2024. And that has dropped by that number, at least. During spring break, I was driving around. I saw a few Canadian license plates, but just nowhere near what you would normally see. And we've heard anecdotally from like our lodging partners who say, yeah, I've had Canadian visitors come every year, and they just called me up and said, I'm sorry, I can't visit this year. Maybe we can do it again another time. Or families from Canada who come and spend some time, and they're just canceling their reservations. So we've heard it, and I think we're going to feel it. Canadian spending is down across the board, especially for a state like Oregon, which is, has close proximity to the Canadian border, and that goes for Washington and all the other Pacific Northwest states as well. But I've been staying in contact with a counterpart of mine, Visit Saskatchewan. She said, as politely as Canadians are, that this, sure, they're just encouraging folks to stay home and spend their money at home right now. I'm sure that not all Canadians are staying home, but that's the big obvious one right now that we're seeing. As those numbers continue to kind of come out, we'll probably see more of that, especially with summer coming up now. And then, you know, just European nations have also kind of curtailed their travel to the United States and Oregon. It's mostly a conversation of values and that kind of thing. So we're trying to be sensitive about that, but also keep in touch with some of our Canadian and other partners and let them know the door is always open. You know, we'd love to have you back, and let's just keep talking.
True. And we'll see. Right now, I imagine the question on gas prices is pretty fluid.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty new situation within the last month or so, gas prices spiking so dramatically. We've seen spikes over the years when it comes to supply and demand, but this is new territory for everybody. Spring break, it sounded like when I talked to you, you know, I've reached out to a few local businesses, and it sounds like it was decently busy. The roads certainly are busy. I know a couple agencies that rent vacation rentals, and they were full. But again, I'm wondering if these are folks who had plans already made and they didn't want to change them. But summer is going to be a real test. I know, for example, there's a couple of big events that usually happen around here in the spring and the summer. And the people who are putting them on have seen a real drop in ticket sales at this point compared to years past. So, you know, when people get out and they're off of school and they're ready to rev up their vehicles and you know, head somewhere, you know, summer's going to tell the tale. I talked to a counterpart of mine up in Astoria, Warrenton, the Chamber of Commerce up there, and they're, you know, for example, they're thinking about, well, what does this mean for a lot of the waterborne festivals we have, the fishing festivals we have, and things like that. You know, it's just no way to project any of that right now. So we're just trying to keep in. I think the biggest thing that we can do is keep in touch with all of our industry partners, other DMOs, and keep doing what we can to support our small businesses as we head forward into kind of uncharted territory here.
Summer is really going to be the test, not just here, but for coastal tourism statewide. Thanks for listening. And for the full conversation, find us on the Let's Talk Tillamook YouTube channel. I'm Shayna Peterson, and this has been Let's Talk Tillamook. Welcome to Let's Talk Tillamook. I'm Shayna Peterson. The hospitality industry along the Oregon coast has been dealing with a workforce crunch for years, and new pressures from immigration enforcement, housing costs, and a lack of childcare are hitting coastal communities across the state. I asked Dan Haig, Interim Executive Director of Visit Tillamook Coast, what he's hearing from businesses on the ground. The hospitality industry up and down the Oregon coast depends heavily on immigrant labor. Are coastal businesses experiencing labor shortages or the chilling effect of federal immigration enforcement? And how does that workforce instability affect the visitor experience?
Well, I haven't honestly heard too much about when it relates to federal, when it comes to ICE and things like that. I've heard a few stories. I live up in Nehalem, and I know there was an ICE presence there a few months ago, and some businesses up in Seaside experienced a visit from ICE not too long ago, and then down Central South Coast as well. And of course, you hear things about they're looking to increase their presence perhaps in the coming months, and we don't know what that looks like. I think that's kind of a separate issue from, and bears watching, obviously, but it's a separate issue from what has already been kind of a workforce issue for all of our small businesses. They just can't find enough people to work and to cover hours.
Whether or not you depend heavily on our immigrant workforce, you depend heavily on our workforce. And I suppose one of the things I would say is
housing. There's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of factors. A big one that, you know, we've heard a lot of stories about is childcare. There's just not available childcare in our area or much of the coast. It's been referred to as a childcare desert. So young single mothers or fathers who need to have a, or want to have a job, but they can't find a place for their, if they're not lucky enough to have grandparents out here or whatnot, or friends, but that's a big effect. And then there's just, you know, young people maybe moving away. There's a lot of changes in the air when it comes to workforce, and we try to help in which ways we can. I mentioned workforce training. We're trying to, we have a class that we offer at Nestucca High School called Tourism and Hospitality, Introduction to Tourism and Hospitality. We're trying to introduce kids to like some of the careers that are available in the industry and maybe get them excited about staying and working here. But yeah, it's workforce is just a thing. I've known, you know, there's businesses that have had to change their hours, you know, constantly because they're getting hiring employees, but they're hiring an employee, but then they lose two. One moves away, and it's just an ongoing cycle right now. And
right now, these times, not knowing what's going to happen,
right.
it's got to be scary.
It is. And then you mentioned gas prices, and that's just another factor, not only for people who are commuting to work, but for the businesses who need to, you know, like restaurants who need to ship stuff in. What's that going to look like in the next few months? It's already starting to pinch, so.
These aren't just tourism problems. They're community problems, and they don't stop at any county line. Coastal tourism has long relied on federal agency partnerships, Forest Service, BLM, USDA, and we're already seeing significant cuts there. Perhaps equally consequential is the cascade effect on Oregon's state budget as federal dollars disappear. What does that mean for the future of Oregon coast tourism?
Again, we're kind of sailing into the unknown. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to pinpoint anything right now with so many fluid funding situations. We're somewhat fortunate in that some of the agencies that you mentioned, we don't necessarily rely on the same stream of grant funding that they do, although we do our fair share of cultivating and finding grants that will help us support the programs that I talked about. But yeah, some of our partners are having to get leaner and meaner, and we're in that as well. We have a small team, but we're trying to be as nimble as possible when it comes, and creative as possible when it comes to finding grant funds. And because, you know, so many grants were out there last year have now disappeared or shrunk, so that means, or the opportunities have shrunk, so that means everybody's going for the same pot of money. I mean, from our end, as I mentioned, we offer a number of grants. We just finished up our marketing grants that we offer every year, for example, and they're very popular with local businesses because it helps them market events and the things that they do. They can get a new website or brochures or things like that. It's a very popular, very easy grant to apply for. We had close to 60 applicants, which is, boy, up from 40 or so, or 30 from previous years. So there's a lot of people out there hoping to get a little extra help with things like that. And we're not, like I said, we're not immune to it either. But I think the answer would be, we're just having to look at more creative partnerships, finding more ways we can collaborate with some of our partners, go in together on funding opportunities, for example, as things we're looking at right now. And, you know, making sure that we're all connected. So, you know, we're not maybe trying to reinvent the wheel and applying for the same funds for the same things and maybe just partner on those things. So it's going to take a certain amount of more creativity than usual. And that's fine. We're up for it.
I don't know. I see positive things for Oregon tourism. I really do.
Yeah, I think so. I think the tourism industry overall is looking at different ways to represent the people that they represent. You know, they're looking at ways to improve accessibility to campgrounds and beaches and things like, and attractions, being more conscientious about where your food comes from, and getting people excited about local food. And it's exciting. There's new opportunities to be had out there, new ways to look at tourism and new ways to interact with tourism. So, and overall, we just want the things that we do to excite tourists, but improve life for the people who stay behind when the tourists leave. So that's kind of where our aim is always going to be.
Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you.
For the full conversation, find us on the Let's Talk Tillamook YouTube channel. I'm Shana Peterson, and this has been Let's Talk Tillamook.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team.